You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It is episode number 50 of From the Braves Booth, and it's great to have you with us alongside Joe Simpson and our producer-engineer Jonathan Chadwick. Ben Ingram here with you, coming to you from Houston, Texas, sitting here in the visiting radio booth here at Minute Maid Park, getting ready for game two in this series between the Braves and the Astros. And Joe, it's our second show of the season, but it is show number 50. I can't believe we made it this long.
Well, it's celebration. I wish I had a popper to shoot off in here. You know, maybe there's one lying in that booth down the way where we shot off poppers here in 2021.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But yeah, that's a milestone. That's a good day.
It is. Our email address is bravesbooth@gmail.com. Again, bravesbooth@gmail.com. Any questions or comments you might have, feel free to fire off, and we'll get to them at some point along the way. Once again, you listeners have come through with just question after question after question. I mean, really, really, really good, thoughtful questions that we look forward to getting to a little bit later on in our show. We'll do that. But as we do this episode, Joe, the Braves won last night, so a 10-5 start. But some tough news today. Ozzie Albee's going to be on the shelf for a little while with a broken toe. And we were without Ozzie a couple of years ago for a large chunk of the season. And you think about all the guys that are greatly missed when they're out. Ozzie's towards the top of that list, you ask me.
He certainly is. He's one of the leaders on the team. Everybody kind of gravitates to him among his teammates because he's such a special guy. He fouled a couple of balls off his right big toe down in Miami. Same spot and really painful. It might have even been the same at bat. I can't remember precisely. But then last night in the ninth inning, he got hit on that big toe with about a 95-mile-an-hour gasser, and that did the trick, broke his toe. He's going to be out for who knows how long. I don't know how long it takes that to heal, but he's certainly on the injured list, and David Fletcher has been recalled from Gwinnett.
Yeah, in the meantime, we'll see Guillorme and Fletcher split time at second base. And good news is you have a very deep lineup. Michael Harris will go to the two-hole more times than not, especially against right-handed pitchers. And I'm excited for that. It'll be great to see Michael get that opportunity, and you know that he's not going to let you down.
Yeah, it does take the wind out of your sails a little bit to not see Ozzie in there. But there are capable people capable of moving into that two spot and helping out. Michael's certainly one of them. Maybe against left-handers, you might see Orlando Arcia bat second. But we'll wait to see how that all plays out. There's an element of Ozzie and what he does, not just offensively but defensively, running the bases, that inspires everybody, and hopefully somebody can take up that cause.
Yeah, I just hope that it's not too long. I mean, I go back to, and I know it's very different injuries, but I go back to early last season. Remember, Orlando Arcia was hit by a pitch and was out for a little while, and you think about the hands and the wrists. And turns out he wasn't down that long, not nearly as long as we thought. So maybe this will be similar with Ozzie.
Yeah, let's hope that's the case. You know, the IL, what is it for an injury like this? A minimum of 7 to 10 days?
Right.
So I would be very shocked if it's only 10 days. But even if it's through the end of the month, into May, that would be okay too if things are progressing the right way. You don't want to come back too soon. It might alter his swing. Might alter his gait when he's trying to run and mess up something else. So make sure it's right when he comes back.
15 games into the season, and the Braves will go without their starting catcher from opening day and second baseman for opening day. I was going to ask Snit a little bit later today about Sean Murphy. Maybe we get an update there, still battling the oblique. But that's how it goes in Major League Baseball. That's why we always say, well, if this team is healthy, we think they can accomplish this. No team is ever healthy all the way through.
No, we say that constantly, and I sometimes think people get tired of hearing it if they remain healthy. Well, and don't forget Spencer Strider.
Yeah.
So catcher, starting pitcher, starting second baseman, that's three key guys on the Braves team, everyday team, that are missing, going to be missing. So that's pretty good shot in the pretty good shot to this team, a punch in the gut, but they are capable of rallying the troops, circling the wagons, whatever cliche you want to use, because they have so much talent and so much depth. Hopefully it won't be missed.
And that's right. You think about opening day and who you are, who you have up the middle of the field, and three of those five guys are gone.
Yeah, right.
One of them for the season.
Uh-huh.
But that's how it goes in Major League Baseball. We're facing an Astros team right now that's having their own issues with health on the mound. And so what I'm getting at is this starts really day one. It's not like you get to June, July, August, and you hope that you're healthy. Injuries start taking place all the time. And like we've said before, that's why it's so gratifying to win your division, get to the postseason, because you overcame 6 months' worth of injuries.
Yeah, and I always remember, I go back to things that Pete Van Wieren said or Skip said that ring true all the time. And one of the things from Pete was, you know, there's so much sweat and blood and midnight oil burned trying to figure out who's going to be on the then 25-man roster. You know, how many pitchers, how many catchers, how are they going to figure this out? And he said, and then within a week's time, there's injuries or other things that happen that blow up that whole opening day roster.
Right.
And it didn't matter what you worried about right at the end of spring training, because the roster turns over and it changes so much. Braves are certainly experiencing that right now.
Yes, they are. Well, talk about something positive. Marcelo Ozuna has been amazing. I mean, he's been really an MVP for the first 2.5 weeks of the season. He has a 14-game hitting streak. He was a hero in Miami with that home run in the top of the ninth inning in the finale. What he's been doing here in the first month has been as good as we have ever seen him, and we've seen him in stretches where he's been hot enough to carry the team.
Yep.
But this stretch that he's in right now might be the best we've ever seen from him.
It could be. I mean, he's got this hitting streak working. There's some naysayers who were kind of saying, well, sure, he's playing hard now. He's in a contract year. You know, his deal's up at the end of the year. I think that's selling him a little short. His deal wasn't up in the second half of last season, and especially from, June 1 on, maybe even May 1st on, He was as good as there was in baseball. So I think that's selling him a little short when you just kind of use that as an excuse for Marcel going good right now, and nobody's better. He did not win Player of the Week.
How?
Jonathan's buddy, Pete Alonso, did.
Oh, come on.
I don't know how. You know, well, he hit 4 homers in 5 days or 3 in 4 days or something. I guarantee you he wasn't hitting the ball as hard as Marcel.
No, and he wasn't doing it in the ninth inning to.
No.
Down to 2 strikes. You know, for Marcel, it really is amazing how things can change. You go back to this time a year ago, and we're thinking, is he going to be on this team next week?
Yeah.
Are they going to keep him around? Now we're sitting here in April of 2024, there's a team option for him next year. And if you came to this booth and said, what do you guys think? I'd say, pick it up right now.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose this guy.
I don't know. I was one of the guys in April last year when he was 5 for 59. I thought he was done.
I did too.
I mean, we're just watching him day in and day out and chasing bad pitches and striking out a lot, making weak contact. It was not fun to watch, and I really thought he was done. And lo and behold, he picked himself up and got after it, and look at him today.
Yeah, been tremendous. And just not big base hits, but big base hits in the clutch. I mean, that's the thing. You can put up big-time numbers, but what are you doing in the moments where your team needs you? And his biggest hits and his biggest contributions have come when the team has needed him most, like we saw in Miami the other day. I want to ask you about Ronald Acuña. 7 steals on the year, so out to a really good start there. Are you surprised that we're 15 games into the season and he hasn't hit a home run yet?
Yeah, a little bit. If there was a place where I thought maybe he should have had one, might have been either in Philadelphia or at home. He's had some good luck in Miami. Chicago was too cold. He was miserable there. And he could certainly do it in the next 2 days here in Houston. I'm not worried about it, nor am I concerned about, I'll call it the lack of home runs that the team is hitting. And the reason I'm not concerned is because they're winning and they're scoring runs. If they were, you know, 5 games under 500 and only scoring a couple of runs a game, I'd say, man, we're missing the home run ball.
Right.
But we're not missing it right now, so I'm not concerned at all.
This team is currently, I know it's only 15 games, but they're currently on pace to absolutely shatter the Major League record for doubles in a season by a team. So while the home run ball has not been what we saw last season, they've been kind of middle of the pack with the home runs across Major League Baseball. Doubles are through the roof. Runs are through the roof. And I don't care how you're scoring the runs or winning the games, whether you're hitting a bunch of homers or a bunch of doubles, just go win. And I'm right there with you. You look at Ronald's numbers, defensively he's been terrific. He's batting just a shade under .290. He's still scoring a bunch of runs. He's getting on base. He's changing games with his legs. Like I mentioned, the stolen bases have been there. To me, that's where Ronald is most valuable. And while the 40-71 season last year was amazing, where he is most valuable is what he can do when he changes a game, when he gets on base and nobody's out. To me, he does things that I've never seen too many other people do, and that's been there.
I wonder what the percentage of times that he gets on base that he scores. You know, you add up his base hits, his walks, hit by pitches, and then factor in how many times did he score after that happened. I'll bet the percentage is extremely high.
Yeah.
And that's what I look at as much as home runs is on-base percentage for him, because I know he's going to swipe some bases, and I know there's guys behind him that will drive him in. So as long as we can count on that, count on him getting on base, hey, we're in good shape.
Let's see. He's been on base 27 times this season, and he has scored 16 runs.
Okay, so better than 50%.
Yeah, that's a great ratio. I mean, you go back to last year, he led the league in on-base percentage, and he led the league in runs scored. So whether he walks, whether he ropes a double, when he gets on base, it seems like half the time he's scoring runs.
Yes.
And that's where he changes the game.
Yeah, exactly. It's rare. It's more unusual that he does not score when he got on and he's left on base than when he scores. I want to go back to the doubles you were talking about. There were some hard-hit doubles last night, just like there were in Miami. And if you ask the guys, you know, are you upset that you've got 10 doubles instead of 7 or 8 homers, they might kind of wince a little bit, but the fact is they're squaring the ball up. The fact that it's not going out of the ballpark, they don't really have that much control over. But you had that great stat in Miami the other night where there were like 15 hard-hit balls of 100 miles an hour or better.
In one game.
They're crushing the ball. They are crushing it. It's just that right now they're not going out of the yard.
Yeah, and that's fine. Just go win ball games, and that's what matters the most. I think once the weather gets warmer, you'll see more of those balls fly out. Here's the thing. They hit 307 home runs last season. It's kind of foolish to expect a repeat performance of that. I still think they'll be amongst the leaders in home runs by the end of the season.
There's no reason to bet against them.
Right, exactly. But just because they don't go out and hit 307 home runs again doesn't mean that the season was a failure when it comes to the home run ball.
Last night we got on the bus and Travis d'Arnaud was on there, and he hit that long drive to deep center here that was caught. And I said, man, you hit the heck out of that ball. And he goes, oh, I got jammed a little. You know, so they're able to laugh about it.
Yeah.
Because they're squaring it up. You couldn't say that to a guy who's 0-for-19, you know.
Right.
He wouldn't take it the same way, but they know they're hitting the ball hard and they're scoring runs.
I want to ask you about this spot in the rotation vacated by Spencer Strider with his injury. We saw Darius Vines last night. First inning and a half, two innings, kind of shaky, but after he settled in, I thought he did a pretty good job, especially on the road against a really good lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm getting at is, and we'll see A.J. Smith-Shawver later, I'm sure, and we'll see Bryce Elder, I'm sure. But the good news is you've got some good options of guys you can dip into in the minor leagues to bring up. And whether it's a trip through the rotation for them, whether they're up for a few weeks or months, whatever it may be, nobody is Spencer Strider, but you certainly have some able bodies to come up and help you win ball games.
I think we felt that way coming out of spring training. I think even before the Strider injury, Ben, I think we thought that, hey, the Braves are in good shape if they lose anybody, if they lose a couple of guys. The depth was much improved over last year, if for no other reason than the experience gained by Vines and Winans and Smith-Shawver getting some starts last year, and certainly Bryce Elder too. I never want to leave him out. But the thing about these guys, let's stick with the Vines for the moment. He looked nervous. He was antsy. He was all over the place in the first inning, especially. Not as much in the second. And then in the third and the fourth, he went 2 2/3 innings of pitching really well once he settled in. And he was really locating that changeup in such a way that it was very effective because he was throwing strikes. He wasn't afraid to throw the ball over the plate early in the count. And if he can carry that on into his future starts, then the Braves have got somebody that can really help him. If he's going to get a spot start 2 weeks from now, and he comes up nervous again, you know, or antsy, he's not doing himself any favors. They need him to be that guy he was the last 2 2/3 last night.
Yeah, and I think it'll tell us a lot about his personality that next go-round, because, in my opinion, if he was able to put all that behind him, the nervousness, couple innings into last night's ball game against that lineup on the road.
Yeah.
I would think he'd be able to do that before the game starts next go round.
Well, and he did it in Colorado last year when he got that win. And anybody that's making their debut at Coors Field is going to have the jitters about making a mistake. He pitched great. So we know it's in there. It's just a matter of him believing it. And the same, you carry this over into A.J. Smith-Shawver. Last year, we saw signs of greatness from this guy. Man, what an arm. But not enough of it went over the plate. There were walks. There were mistakes down the middle of the plate. So when he gets his opportunity, hopefully the improvements he's making right now at Gwinnett will be profitable for him here where he can carry them forward and know what it takes to win up here and not just to come up here and throw wildly, you know, 95, 97 miles an hour. You got to pitch.
Yeah, you do. I wonder, and I'm sure these guys block this out, but I wonder how tough that is to, hey, I'm excited. I'm getting an opportunity to be on the big league squad. I'm going to get a start. But if things don't go all that well, if I'm not perfect in my mind, I'm going to be heading right back down to AAA. That's got to be something that you block out because naturally I think your brain would work that way. If I'm not perfect, if I'm not the very best version of myself, I won't be here for the time the next spot this time the rotation rolls through.
Yeah, I hope they don't think negatively in that regard. I hope they take the attitude that I'm not going back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to show them tonight and the next time, you know, I'm not going back. I'm worthy of being the guy in that fifth spot, and I can help out in the bullpen if needed, but I'm not going back. That's the attitude I think they all have to take.
Speaking of starting pitching, good turnaround for Max Fried that last start. I think we're very encouraged by that.
Yeah, wonderful.
I don't think we're surprised by any means. In fact, I expected that. That first outing in Philadelphia, that he got a bad call against him. Things didn't go well after that, and there's just a lot against him. That next start, sure, it was tough in the first inning. He didn't have a good first inning, but he kind of came out of the nosedive after that. So I felt like that third start, he'd put it together, be the Max Fried we're used to seeing. That was the case, and now you feel like, okay, he's where he wants to be. So I have high expectations for his next start.
I'll tell you what I liked about that start in Miami, and I agree with you 100%. But he was throwing that soap bubble curveball, that you, as you call it, for a strike.
Yeah,
to first pitch strike to a lot of guys, getting ahead on the count with it. And like you, I really liked seeing that. He had confidence in it and wasn't saving it for a strikeout pitch. He was using it to get ahead on the count and got his confidence back in it. Release point confidence was there, and he'll hopefully carry that into his start tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll be great. Yeah, I'll tell you another thing, too, while we're on the topic of starting pitching. Outside of Spencer Strider, of the starters that we have seen in this rotation, for me, you know who's had the best fastball? The guy we'll see tonight, Reynaldo Lopez. His heater, his last outing, was outstanding. He was 96-97. I mean, just dotting the strike zone. I thought that heater was so good. And coupling that with his slider, he's got the curveball and the change, but his two best pitches by far are his fastball slider. I thought what he did in that outing was tremendous for a guy who had not been in the starting rotation in several years, and excited to see more of that this evening.
He's an uncomfortable at-bat for right-handed hitters especially. Lefties get a little better look at his slider because it's coming to them, but right-handers, they've got a long day ahead of them with Reynaldo because, A, he throws hard, and his slider is hard. He's walked a couple of guys, but his command, I think, has been really good, maybe even surprisingly good in the rotation. And I think he's really enjoying himself. His body language and everything out there looks like he's where he wants to be in the rotation and in a Braves uniform, and that's always a good sign.
Something that I learned last night, this is a really good nugget from Wiley Ballard, who's been doing a great job on TV with the sideline reporting. Very big fan of his, and did some great work with us during spring training. But he and I were chatting last night after the ball game, and he said, I had the craziest conversation with Reynaldo. He's got this mouthpiece that he wears. I don't know if you've noticed that. It's like a reddish, light red mouthpiece that he's got in his mouth. And he said, have you ever asked him about that? I said, no. I mean, it's not the first time I've seen a guy out there with a mouthpiece. And he said he started doing that because he was tipping pitches with his tongue. What he would do is his tongue would stay in for his fastball, and he'd stick his tongue out when he threw his slider. So batters are up there looking for the tongue. And if you see the tongue, it's the slider. There's no tongue. You're getting a heater. So I started wearing the mouthpiece. I thought it was a great nugget that Wiley found on Reynaldo. But I was like, I got to tell that on the podcast tomorrow. So hopefully that mouthpiece is in there tonight and there's no tongue showing no matter the pitch.
There's a lot of ways to pick up pitches from a guy, but I never knew that one before. I never heard that one. That's great.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, we have lots of questions to get to. Anything else you want to touch on before we dive into that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. We'll have JJ. You joining us this episode, JC? Yeah, he is. He's got his headset on back
there. He's down in the dumps, I know, because Pete Alonso was player of the week.
Uh-huh.
His favorite player.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits. Make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, we got some questions in here. And by the way, our email address, bravesbooth@gmail.com. bravesbooth@gmail.com. Fire away with any of your questions. There was a question in here asking us about coming back into this ballpark since none of us have been here since the 2021 World Series. And I'll find that specifically in just a moment. But I wanted to start with that one because of where we are and doing this episode from here. And I think for the three of us, it was certainly a pretty magical moment walking in yesterday. I asked Snit about it yesterday, and he said the same thing. But everything that we have been doing on this trip, and I can't imagine this will be like this every time we come here, but in my mind, I keep retracing, well, I remember this from the World Series. I remember walking over here, or this part of the stadium, or this booth, that kind of thing. In other words, everything that we've done here, I keep thinking about 2021 and matching up what I see versus the memories I have from 2.5 years ago. And it was that impactful of a night. It's one of the best nights of our lives. And coming back here for the first time since then, it's definitely something that gives you goosebumps.
You know, plus it's a nice yard. It's a really good ballpark. You look forward to coming back here because it is a good ballpark. Fun to watch a game here with so many things that are going on the field. If it was a bad ballpark or one place we didn't like to come to or a city we didn't like to come to, it might have had a damper on the excitement we felt to come back here, but not so with Minute Maid Park.
Yeah, and that question was from Brian, by the way. I want to make sure I got his name in there. But how's it been for you, JC?
It was good. I came over Sunday night when we arrived from Miami because I'm crazy. And, you know, walking in and just looking out at the field like we are now, just about every single memory and rush of emotion that you could think of came back. And I think that it'll be that way for me as long as I do this and as long as I'm coming back to the stadium. It's the first thing I'll think about every single time.
When you came over Sunday, did you run the bases again?
I did.
Did you slide at home?
I did.
I love that about you. I love that you take advantage just as long as there's enough light to see the bases and get out there. And
he knows how to romanticize a moment, an opportunity.
Turn those corners. Golly. Way to go.
You know, another thing, too, I just love the vantage point that mm-hmm. we have in the press. But this is one of my favorites. I'd kill to have this 81 times a year.
Yeah.
Not that ours is bad, but this is pretty low, and it's really good. It's a great place to call a ball game.
Well, ours is high. I mean, the future of stadiums in baseball, you know, changed from when this one was built. It's 24 years old, opened up in 2000, and that was at a time where the press box and broadcast vantage points were at about the second level, I mean, traditionally. And they have dramatically moved up to make room for suites and better vantage points for the fans, which we understand, but we Wish we could still be a little bit lower like we are here.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Chris. He said, chemistry in the booth is an amazing thing. You guys genuinely seem to like and enjoy each other. It's real, and it comes across on the air, and it's fun for us fans. Does that come naturally, or does it take time to develop?
I think it depends on the booth. You know, I think for the three of us, whatever time it took to develop, it didn't take long. I mean, we all knew each other before we worked with each other. So it wasn't like they all threw us in a booth and, hi, I'm Ben. Nice to meet you. Hi, I'm Jonathan. I'm Joe. We all knew each other and had for a while. We had not been able to work together. I had worked with Jonathan. Jonathan was the pre- and post-game show producer back when I was hosting pre- and post. And the very first person I met in this entire operation all the way back in 2010 was J-Chad. So I've known J-Chad now for 15 years, which is kind of crazy to think about. And then moving over from Mississippi to here, I met you, and we knew each other, and we'd speak all the time. We'd never gotten to work with each other. And, of course, I knew who you were before I moved here. I mean, I'd always been a fan of yours and always enjoyed your work. So just to be around you and some of the other guys who are around, that was a tremendous thrill for me. So when it came to putting us all on the same show and putting us in the same booth, whatever time it took to have any further chemistry, it didn't take long at all.
No, and I think let Jonathan finish that up.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, to Ben's point, you know, I did this on a fill-in basis for three or four seasons. So, you know, I was familiar certainly with you and, you know, good friends with Ben and had worked with Ben. And so we weren't coming into foreign territory to do this. But, you know, I think we also understood quickly what makes everyone in here tick and what you need may be different from what Ben needs and vice versa. So, it didn't take long, and it, with the three of us, it does seem just it's natural.
And I think there's a certain level, certainly a level of respect that we have for each other, where I admire what both of you do, and appreciate what you do. And even though I hadn't worked specifically with you, Ben, I felt like I had because Don was always singing your praises when he got to work with you. And I would hear you, and I'd hear some of your calls, you know, driving home, some of those things. So I had a good idea of what it was going to be like to work with you. But there's got to be a mutual respect. We have that, I believe. And you got to have a sense of humor. You got to be able to laugh. And we certainly do that. And I think that kind of crosses over any insecurities or whatever there might be. And I will go so far as to say that didn't exist in this radio booth until we got started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, we're friends. We are. We there doesn't have to be baseball going on. Doesn't have to be in the middle of the season for us to communicate and reach out. And I hear stories all the time about other booths, and there have been stories through the years of broadcasters getting into arguments and fights and over little things where over the course of a summer things blow up. And I just think to myself, I would absolutely hate if I had as much as a day of that, because I don't think that would ever happen.
Too stressful.
Yeah, I agree. So I look forward to seeing each of you every single year and every single day during the season and what we're going to get into that night. And that goes out to the other guys that work with us, too. I think we've done a pretty good job of assembling a good group where, yes, baseball is first, and your talent as far as bringing our fan base, Braves baseball, is of utmost importance. But I think it's also a very valuable element of the chemistry that we all have, and that goes a long way. Because when you got that, I mean, sky's the limit for your broadcast.
Yeah, and there's no jealousies.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care. I don't care if you have all these great calls. I don't care if you're doing every inning. It's not that important to me to be that guy, to have the best line, to have the best call, as much as it is to have all of us be involved in those calls. So I'm happy for you. I know you're happy for me, and we're both once in a while happy for Jonathan.
Occasionally, yeah.
So that really goes a long way.
As long as it's sometimes. Here's one from Jen. You guys travel a lot. Do you ever wake up in a hotel and forget where you are? And are there any funny hotel stories you can share? Funny you ask that, Jen.
Go ahead.
Well, the first question, I remember this was 2018 or 19. We had a Sunday night baseball game in Cleveland, so naturally we're traveling late. We were going to Cincinnati from there, so when the game's over, we hopped on the charter, flew to Cincinnati, and I remember waking up the first morning in Cincinnati, and I was tired. I was run down. We'd been gone for a while, and I literally woke up and kind of it took me a minute to figure out where we were to the point where I looked at my room key and said, oh, yeah, we're in Cincinnati. And then as far as any funny hotel stories, Sunday night we arrived here from Miami. I came over to the ballpark, worked for a couple hours, and went back to the hotel, hopped in bed, and I could not figure out how to turn the light off over my bed. So I slept with the light on Sunday night.
Too fancy for that boy.
Things happen.
Woke up at 8 o'clock in the morning, used the restroom, went to hop back in bed, and saw where that particular light was that I could not find the evening before.
That's the way it always happens. The one that always comes back to me about being on the road is if you're on like a three-city road trip, sometimes you go in your room, and if you have to get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, you get up and you turn to the right and go to the bathroom. Sometimes you get up, you go to the left. And sometimes you forget where you are and which way to turn. And Skip Carey slept with no clothes on. And on one of those three-city trips, he was in Montreal, and he was stumbling and, you know, groggy, and he opened the door to the hotel and walked outside, and he didn't have any clothes on.
Thinking he went to the restroom?
Thinking he was going to the bathroom, and he went outside, and he said, you never sober up or wake up as quick as you do when you hear that door click behind you, and you're in a bright hallway, and he said... And I wasn't even in my own country. So he found a linen closet for housekeeping, and I think wrapped a sheet around him because a towel wouldn't fit, wouldn't do it, and called one of the guys in the TV truck, one of the directors, and asked him to go get him a key and save the day.
That's great. Our next road trip, we go to Seattle. Last time I was there, the door malfunctioned. They had to kick the door in. So I could get in my room. That's about the wildest thing that's happened.
I'm glad you're on the outside
of
it.
And clothed.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. I think you guys would all agree that you're lucky to do what you do, but at the end of the day, it's a job. How much do you pour into what you do, and are there any days to get motivated where it's hard to get motivated to show up and get to the ballpark like there are for us 9-to-5ers? That's from Levi. Levi, let me answer that this way. I think everybody in what we do probably has days where, all right, we're tired, it's a grind, you've done your routine every single day, you need an off day. But I would say that we've had fewer days like that than most teams because we win every night.
Yeah.
And have for the last 6 years. I wonder what those days have been like for the Rockies, for the Reds in recent years, the Nationals, the Marlins, where every night you're going in there, you're losing, and it's got to be a lot more challenging than it is for us when we get to see our team win more times than not.
Yeah, and I would say, too, that at least for me personally, the best part of my day is after I get to the ballpark. The grind for me is getting ready to go to the ballpark, even at home. When I lived in Marietta, planning to leave at a certain time to make sure that I didn't get stuck in traffic going to Turner Field, you know, driving through the connector, stuff like that. That all, I hated that.
Yeah.
I got tired of that later in the summer, that kind of grind. But once I got to the ballpark, and it's still that way, once I'm here at the ballpark, it's the best part of the day. And we all still love what we do. We, as Ben said, we get to see a winner every night, great players, good people. So we're much luckier than most when it comes to that. If memory serves, this is from Brenda, and she may have an ulterior motive to this. If memory serves, Joe and Jay Chad are married. That's correct, Brenda. You're still married, right, Jonathan?
I think.
Yep, me too. Ben, do you ever see yourself getting married? And do your wives ever travel with you guys? Ben, you go first.
I do, yeah, I do, Brenda. I've kind of been a late bloomer on that. In fact, I remember being a little kid and thinking, I'm never getting married. I want to call baseball games. I want to travel the world and have girlfriends in every town and all this stuff. Thought of a 10-year-old.
So you did pretty good.
A whole lot hadn't changed. No, I'm kidding. No, but I do. And taken right now, Brenda, it's been going well for a while, and I do see that eventually taking place, and so does she. So that's good news, and who knows, maybe a year or so from now we'll be talking about all three of us being taken.
That'd be great. That's, I know we're Jonathan and I are pulling for that, too. Wives traveling on the road, yes, they do occasionally. Kathy, not as much as she used to, but Margaret Ann certainly has been on a few trips.
She has. She enjoys coming and meeting us at different spots during the road. She usually likes to pick the spots that cost me a lot of money.
She's really good at that.
She is. But she enjoys coming to Miami for obvious reasons, staying at the beach.
The gals never come to Cincinnati, do
No, they,
they
don't.
New York, L.A., Miami, here we come.
Yeah.
This is a great question from Brittany. Of the three of you, who is the most organized? All right, Joe, let's answer this on the count of three, all right? One, two, three. Jonathan.
And it's not even a close second on that deal.
You know, it just that's what makes me tick, though. I mean, I just – there's for me, there's a spot for everything, and – you know, if I'm not organized, that's when I'm probably a little bit irritable because everything just has a spot.
Oh, as an example, just yesterday in the press room, we were eating dinner. Jonathan got up to go eat this gigantic dessert that he put together on a plat. I'm not in a cup. I'm not sure what it was. But while he was gone, his phone was sitting there. And I told Ben, I said, you know, I really like messing with Jonathan to move his pens around, you know, rearrange something where he's working just to throw him off a little bit. And I would never mess with his phone, but it's very tempting because I know it would just throw him into a tizzy.
Lose his mind. We had the game in Boston 2 years ago, JC?
Yes.
And our bosses were all there. Derek Schiller, Braves president, was there. And he walked into the booth, and I forgot who I was working with. It may have been you.
I was there.
Okay. So you and I are down in the booth. J-Chad was somewhere else. And he's up top in his perch, his overlord position, as we've called it here lately. And everything is lined up from pens and his book and his notepad and all this. And Derek comes in, sees it, and he just starts throwing everything around and just left it that way.
It was like dominoes.
Yeah, yeah. So J-Chad walked in like, what happened? Who did this? Who's responsible for this?
Yeah, that was good. This is from Skip. Always got to read one from Skip, right?
Yeah.
At one point in time, Brian Snitker seemed like a forgotten man in the Braves organization, and you're right there, Skip. Nobody really could appreciate all he had done. All he's done is win. At the conclusion of this season, he will have been the man at the helm for almost 9 seasons. That's a lifetime for a big league manager. What, in our opinions, has led to his success and his steady hand? That is a great question.
Sure is. I think there's three things that jump out to me. Number one, he's a baseball lifer, so there's a lot of wisdom there. Number two, he's steady. He's not going to get too high, too low. He's going to be able to manage the ups and downs of a season. Number three, look at the staff around him and the wisdom that he has around him. I think he has all three of those things together, and you put all that together, and you're going to have a pretty rock-solid manager.
I agree. I'm going to add on a couple of things. One, his communication ability. His door proverbially always open. And he's approachable. You know, he's not one of those managers that is kind of hands off and lets all of his lieutenants handle all the dirty work and not want to talk to anybody. Brian's very approachable. He's very real. And I think that goes back to him being in the organization for 40 years and never managing in the big leagues. He coached in the big leagues quite a bit, but he has a real sound appreciation for where he is, how hard he worked to get here. He's not going to mess it up by being a jerk or have his ego get in the way. And he learned from the best, yeah, Bobby Cox, and he'll tell you the same thing.
I'll give you one more. He knows how hard this game is.
Yes.
Because he played it, he managed it, and he did that at the minor league level. And you see all the time guys who – think about Ted Williams. Ted Williams wasn't a great manager. He's one of the best baseball players who ever played. But the game is filled with guys who are terrific players who maybe weren't the best managers because they don't understand why it's not as easy right to hit to their players as it was for them. Snit knows how hard this game is, and I think he manages his players accordingly.
I think the only thing I would add to that, you guys pretty much touched on everything – and Joe kind of talked about this a little bit, but his experience, he's not 37 years old. He's been doing this for a long time. There's not a lot in this game he hasn't seen. And so I think, you know, the experience and the wisdom that he has certainly has put him in the position that he's in.
This is from Mitch, and he says, and this is an easy one to answer. If you guys are lucky enough to call another World Series winner, would you prefer it take place in Atlanta? Absolutely. I saw what the scene looked like in Game 5 in 2021 and what it would have been like if we had won that night.
Yeah.
Bedlam.
Yeah, and the Battery is such a wonderful place for all of that pregame buildup, the prep, the excitement. It was just fabulous. And no place to walk out there. I mean, it was so crowded. Those are fans that couldn't even get in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
From Calvin, there were years and seasons where I feared the Dodgers. We finally got past them a few years ago. Do you fear them now?
They're a really good ball club. And I know they'd be a challenge in any series, regular season or postseason. But I don't think there's any reason for our guys to fear any other team out there.
No, I agree. I mean, we respect them. We know they're good. And they got Freddie Freeman, so that's always going to be a tough test.
Yeah. I thought this is a really good one. This is from John. He said, I saw Chip Carey's son made his Oakland A's debut, and that's Chris. Chris did an amazing job. And John goes on to say, what a thrill for their family. I thought Chip did a nice job in Atlanta, especially in big moments. I was curious if you guys still talk to Chip and keep up with him, even though he's moved on. That's from John. And absolutely we do. I mean, he's a friend of ours. And JC, you chat with him about every day, don't you?
Yeah, you know, Chip and I, we talk on the phone maybe once, twice a week, but we certainly text every single day. I bet if you were to look through my phone, there probably hasn't been a day in the last 7 years that there hasn't been some sort of communication.
Yeah, we all, in some form or fashion, maybe not as often as Jonathan, but we are in constant touch with him. He sent us a picture yesterday, the three of us, of he and Chris together in Oakland. It was a very special picture for all of us to see that, and we're very happy for his son. We know that Chip is very proud and should be, and it's, you know, we miss him.
Yeah.
We miss him, and he's in a good place in St. Louis. They're not as good as we are. Hang with them.
That's right. We'll see them, I think, right after the All-Star breaks, first time we see them.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, here's a good one from Jason. Joe, I'm 45 years old. You've been a constant for me growing up as a Braves fan. I know you're not going to do work forever, despite what I'd like to see you do. What's the next few years look like for you, and how long will we be lucky enough to hear the last of the remaining big four? That's from Jason.
Jason, thank you for including me in the big four. That's a compliment in itself. I wish I had a crystal ball on that. I keep threatening to head down to St. Simon's and stay there for the last two or three years.
We won't let him.
But here I still am. And the Braves have been very good to me. They have allowed me to cut back on my schedule to a level where it makes it agreeable to me and work for me and Kathy. So right now it's a good spot. I am 72 years old. It's not going to last forever, but I'm enjoying watching this team play, and we'll just see. Let's just take it kind of year to year.
Good enough.
Here's one from Caleb in Dawsonville. Ben, I really appreciate how much you prepare for each broadcast. It comes through on the air. How long in advance do you start preparing for each broadcast, and where do you start? Also, at what point in the season does Jay Chad start to get on your nerves?
Spring training?
Yeah, already. Where are we right now?
Usually around that second spring training road trip we take together. No, I'm kidding.
Bless his heart. We're going to make him cry.
Yeah,
either that or we're going to get punched.
Yeah. I think for the prep, I think in order to be good at it, you have to enjoy it. I love prepping for a game. I'm kind of, you know how we talk about J-Chat is with his organization back there. I've got my own method and my own routine that if anything's off, it bothers me. So I love researching a new pitcher. I love researching a new team, new ballpark, that kind of thing. I love that. More times than not, it starts after a game. I like to go ahead and look at the next day's pitching matchup before I go to bed after a ball game. So I'll do that. If I can have that done, then I feel like I'm way ahead the following day and I can kind of ease into the rest of my stuff. But that's where it all begins for me.
And I appreciate it. I know the fans do too, Ben. I appreciate when you say, you know, hey, I was just looking at something today or I was just reading something this morning, because I know it's going to be a good nugget and that we can talk about that and play off of it for a while. And I think the fans appreciate that freshness that isn't just low and outside ball one.
Yeah.
You know, you bring good stuff to the table every day, and that's all doing your homework, and you do it every day and do it well.
It's fun to do. Really is. With day games, what do you guys do to relax in the evenings? Do you watch other games at night, or do you check out of baseball until the next game? That's from Will.
I think there are times where there might be a dinner or, you know,
yeah,
a beer and Mexican food or nachos or something afterwards that before everybody calls it a day after a day game. But there are also days where we're gassed, you know, we're tired, and maybe just do room service or something like that, where we don't go out.
Mm-hmm.
We don't go out every night.
No, not at all.
I don't go out every night.
Got to go find something to eat. But
yeah,
that's it. A lot of times for a day game, day games just drain me.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you call the day game, I'm ready to go to bed.
Yeah.
So usually it's more night games where you want to unwind after a game, where you might stay out and linger a little while.
Agreed. This is from Tom. If one of the three of you were to be tossed from a game, who would it be and why?
That's Jonathan. Why? Because he has the shortest fuse in the room, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well,
he'd come back to the dugout like, did you see the way that guy? He'd notice something that none of us noticed.
Yeah.
Did you see how he looked at me?
Yeah.
Like, no, I didn't. He's like, next time he looks at me like that, I'm going to go get that guy.
Smack talk.
Yeah.
Oh, he'd trash talk him to death.
Now, I think you could do the most damage. I think you have a long fuse, but once it's gone, it could be a nuclear explosion.
Yes, that's true. There would be bats and everything else leaving the dugout. Yeah. I can tell you one time, this is a great story about Bobby. You know, Bobby Cox has the most ejections in the history of baseball. And there was a time before all the laptops and all that stuff in the dugout where the next day's pitcher was charting the game in the clubhouse, and he was doing it from there because he could see the pitches from the center field camera on TV, whether it's TBS or Fox or Bally, whatever it was. This was TBS days. And Glavin was pitching and felt like he was getting squeezed. He wasn't getting any calls. And Bobby's barking at the umpire. And Maddox knew Bobby so well. And Bobby came storming up into the clubhouse to say, where were those pitches? And Maddox immediately said, oh, he's squeezing us to death out back there. He's killing us. He's missed 10 pitches. You know, there's no way we're going to win if this guy. And Bobby immediately went out and got thrown out.
Oh, man.
Greg Maddox.
That's beautiful. That is so good. Here's a good one from Kip. What is the best non-playoff baseball atmosphere you've ever witnessed? This year's home opening series versus the Diamondbacks has to be high on my list, specifically the Saturday comeback game. That's a good call, Kip. But what stands out to me, non-postseason, hands down, the sweep against the Mets to end the 2022 season, which pretty much gave the Braves the division. That was a three-game series where we knew that we needed a sweep. And winning game one and game two, the way that they did, they were behind in both those games, came back. And then that game three, I mean, it would just kill the Mets right there.
Yeah, there are definite highlights of guys that reached milestones that was very exciting. What year did Chipper win the MVP? 98?
99.
That year when when Chipper single-handedly destroyed the Mets. Every game, every at-bat, he was doing something amazing against New York that earned him the MVP, I feel. And there was a series at Turner Field where he was crushing the ball and single-handedly beating them, and the fans were just eating it up,
yeah,
loving it.
Yeah, those are good ones. I mean, I think if you're going to make a selection on those, they're probably going to be series against either your division rivals or maybe the Dodgers or something like that.
Yeah, right. This one's from Brack, who says it sounds like Shaq, B-R-A-Q-U-E, Brack, in Puyallup, Washington. What are you guys most looking forward to on your trip to Seattle? I will be taking the day off on May 1st to go see my Braves. He's been a fan since 1982, and I never miss a game. Love the radio option on MLB TV. And wants us to travel safe. Wish I could meet you. What are we looking for on our trip to Seattle? I'll go first on that, but since I lived there and played there, I want to see some friends that are still there, Brack. And if possible, I haven't checked the starting times. I think two night games and then a day game. But even lunch, go down to the wharf and to Pike's Market and find a good place to eat and have a good time down there.
Yeah, my brother's going to be coming up. He lives in Idaho. He's going to fly up and go to the series, so I'm really excited about that. And as far as the town, I like Seattle. I think it's a really cool town, good food. I love the ballpark. I love the vantage point. It really might be my favorite vantage point in baseball. I want to go back to kind of confirm that in my mind. But I remember leaving there when we were there 2 years ago. It's the first time I had worked there since 2011, I think. And I just remember sitting there thinking, I can't think of a better vantage point than this. Mm-hmm. And there's some really good ones, and we're sitting in one right now in Houston, but that's a really good part of working that ballpark.
And you worked in Everett, didn't you?
I worked in Eugene. We played Eugene. Everett. They're in that league.
Okay.
Yeah,
right. So you know a lot about the Northwest.
And they had you know what I remember about Everett? They had an item at the concession stands that was clam chowder in a bread bowl.
Oh, cool.
And it was delicious. I remember that was the best concessions item I've ever seen in a minor league ballpark.
Love it. Love it.
I think that's just, you know, one of the pluses of the balanced schedule is getting to go to some of these stops more often than maybe once every 5 or 6 years.
I love the balanced schedule.
Yeah, and, you know, Seattle's so far away from us geographically. But it's fun, and, you know, both of these guys have said it, but it's a phenomenal stadium. And just, you know, getting out there and going to work somewhere that you don't get to go often is kind of neat.
Yeah.
Along those lines, here's a question from Rachel. You're often asked about where do you like to go on the road. Is there any place you dread on the road? Rachel, I'd say not really for me. I know it's a little bit different for Jonathan. Some press boxes are tougher set up or maybe don't have as much room as others. I just love – it's one of my favorite things about this job. I've said this before. Just love getting on the plane and going. I like to go. I like to go see these cities. And getting to travel the country and get paid to do it, to call baseball games is just – I mean, I still pinch myself thinking about that. So there's really no place that I dread. There might be some booths that aren't as good as others, but all in all, I mean, I just love getting on the plane and going.
I never have enjoyed going to New York. There are – a lot of reasons I could give somebody off the air as to why I don't enjoy New York. The times that I've enjoyed New York the most is when we had an off day there, though.
Yeah.
Where we might be able to go to a theater, go to a show, go to dinner, and enjoy what the city offers as opposed to just walking around to find some place to eat lunch before you go to the ballpark and get on the first bus you can to go to the ballpark. That weighs most that's the weight that I have for mostly not wanting to go.
Is it more enjoyable to go to New York to play the Yankees than the Mets for you? Because to take the bus all the way out there to where the Mets play, it's a haul. I mean, that's an hour trip for us a lot of times.
Yeah, it's traffic and got to go through the tunnel. It is a brutal trip. So I would say yes.
Yeah.
But I will say this too: Citi Field is a good ballpark and so much better than Shea Stadium was. Shea Stadium was in its latter stages a real dump. It's comfortable. Shea's pretty. It's still got New York Mets fans, but you can't do anything about that.
Right. That's true. How about you, Jesse?
Well, yeah, I don't think there's any city that I just dread going to. Ben did point out there are some ballparks that are a little harder to get set up in and to work in for me.
Is Wrigley the toughest?
No, actually, since the renovations and you have help from the clubhouse guys that get the equipment up there, but it's a little bit deeper now. It's a little bit wider, and so for me, Wrigley's not. I would say the ballpark, it's one of the most beautiful ballparks in the country.
Yeah.
And you guys love it, but I don't particularly enjoy working there, San Francisco, Oracle Park. It's a brutal setup for me.
That's tight quarters.
It's very, very tight.
And you can't see anything.
I can't see anything, you know. And not only the not being able to see part, but just the way that that booth's set up, if it was set up like a TV booth, it'd be no problem. But it's not. And it's just somewhere, you know, once we go to it every year, it's like a mental hurdle for me. Once I get set up, it takes a long time. But once I do and I'm kind of stuck where I sit, you know, it's fine. But it's a hard place for me to work.
What's the easiest setup?
Miami.
Yeah. We all love Miami. That's a great booth.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're up pretty high there.
Yeah.
Not as high as at home, but pretty high at Lone Depot Park also. But good sight lines. I had one here that I really wanted to read. Okay. I've often wondered about, this is from Frank. I've often wondered about the differences in TV and radio. Can you share the difference? Do you prefer one over the other? You got to work some TV games last year.
I did, and I had never done TV before, which was kind of wild thinking back on it. But we had the three games in Detroit and got to do TV, and I did the first game in my mind thinking that I was doing a lot less radio, and when I went back to watch it, I wasn't. And it was a major transition for me. I felt like by the third game, because we had a doubleheader.
Yeah.
We got rain. It was Friday. I think it was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It was midweek. It was midweek, but the middle game was rained out, so we played two the next day. So I felt like by the time I got to the third game, I felt like I had it, especially from about the fourth inning on,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So in my last five, six innings, I felt like I figured it out because I had to turn off what I've been doing on radio for 20 years, talking about things that people can't see on radio that's there for everybody to see on television.
Yeah, right.
And that was a tough transition to make. So it was fun. I'm a very creative person, and I liked I liked being able to explore creatively different elements of TV as opposed to radio. I don't think I'd want to do it every single day. I just don't think it really fits me, and maybe I'm selling myself short, but I enjoyed it. I liked the challenge. I'd love to do it again, but as far as every single day, I'd prefer to do this.
Good. We're happy about that. Having done TV for so many years, I can tell you that it's a joy to be over on radio. We are more or less unbridled over here. We have the responsibility on our shoulders to have the best show that we can night in and night out. And we rely heavily on Jonathan to have us set up and be ready to go so that we can do our jobs. Jonathan is one man. He does the work of 10 guys. TV is not that way. TV, there are audio people. You know, there are camera operators. There are directors, technical directors, producers, et cetera, tape operators. So there's a long list of people, a long roster of people that help get TV on the air, as you might expect. It's quite an event when it's on television. But you also, on radio, we don't have anybody talking in our ear telling us what's coming up next, what promo to read next, whether there's room to read that promo or not. You got to get it in. It's a sales item. You got to do it, even if it interrupts the game and the flow of the game and doesn't have any application to what's going on in the game. You got to do it. Here, we do it on our time. We get everything done business-wise that we need to do, and we do it when we can make sure it doesn't interrupt the flow of the game, and that's where radio is so wonderful and so fundamentally attached to baseball forever, and will be forever.
Yeah, I think so, too, and I hear people talk about radio in other aspects as a dying medium, and maybe in some cases it is compared to how radio was set up and formatted 20, 30, 40 years ago. I don't believe that for baseball. And in fact, I think baseball on the radio, as perfect of a marriage as I think that it is, I think it's only become more and more enhanced. I think more people are able to listen to us. I think it's more available now than it used to be. And I think it's just such a cool marriage between baseball and radio that just fits like no other sport does with this medium. So I don't ever see that going away, and I'm happy to be a part of that.
I will say this, and I know I would be remiss if I didn't say something about Gretchen Caney, who is now the producer for TV, and how good she is. All too often you get stuck with on TV with producers who never played. Hell, they never even had a jock on. They don't have any idea what the difficult part of it is, because their career was a different path than, say, a player. But they try to impose their will, thinking they know all about the game, on your broadcast. Gretchen Caney was an athlete in her own right, but she grew up a huge Braves fan. She knows baseball inside and out. She knows every bit as much about the game as you and I, Ben, and I think you would readily admit that.
Mm-hmm.
And Braves Television is so lucky to have her at the helm now. It was the best promotion that group has ever made to put her in charge, because of her, how conscientious she is, but more than anything else, because of how much she knows about the game. So they are lucky over on that side, too.
Yeah, they are. It's a good team they have over there, and we're thrilled to have them. And we all get to hang out and travel the country together and call Braves baseball, and it's a lot of fun. Anything else you guys want to throw in there before we wrap this thing up?
I'm good. Just sorry if you just joined us. Sorry if you haven't heard about Ozzy. He's going to be on the IL with a broken toe,
mm-hmm.
and we will certainly miss seeing him in the lineup for the next coming weeks.
Yeah, I've got Snit coming up here in about 25 minutes, so that's what we'll talk about and focus on tonight's ball game. Hope that you'll tune in this evening, and if you're just now listening to this episode, and we recorded this weeks and weeks and weeks ago, and you're just now finding our show, it's good to have you with us, and hope that you'll find us on the radio nightly or on the MLB app as we bring you Braves baseball every single night. But that's 50 episodes in the can now, which is a lot of fun. Of course, we'll have episode number 51 coming up at some point, maybe a little bit later on this month. Till then, for Joe, for J-Chad, I'm Ben. This has been From the Braves Booth.